Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
For some of us, the sandwich generation or generation squeeze may be new terms, but for the generation of carers, both of their ageing or ill parents and their own children, it's very real. Freelance journalist Josie Gagliano is a wife, a mum of twins, and a carer of her mum Conchetta, who is diagnosed firstly with acquired haemophilia and then later dementia. Josie isn't alone in her role as a carer of a parent, of course. Women of the sandwich generation are the single largest group of primary carers globally. Josie has shared her experiences in the Australia Ageing Generation Handbook, How to Care for Them and Yourself. In welcoming Josie to Open House, we started with the untold story, until now, of Generation Squeeze.
Thank you so much for having me in, Dwayne. It can be a very common experience. It's often one that's perhaps not talked about a great deal. I think because there's certainly no shame in caring. It's a wonderful thing to acknowledge and talk about. It's just that you give up so much in life, and we're accustomed these days that we've got so many chances, so many opportunities, especially someone of my age, age 42. I'm in the prime of, you know, being a mother, yeah, and opportunities, and you know, kids are starting school. So, you know, someone who perhaps is not on that wavelength or hasn't had to talk about, you know, caring for a loved one, might think, well, really, you know, are you dedicating your life to caring? What about you? What about holidays? What about all of that? So, caring is a huge part of our society, and it exists everywhere. Anyone you speak to will have a story.
We've kind of started halfway through your story. Let's go back to the beginning.
Okay.
You're a young girl. Mum and dad came to Australia and lived in the same house pretty much for all of your life.
From Italy, yep.
And came to Australia, made it their home, and then things changed pretty quickly for you, didn't they?
Yeah, look, you know, we built the great Australian, well, I guess very Italian home. Dad worked hard, mum was the homemaker, and then one day dad, on a quiet Sunday morning, went to his second job, and on his way was involved in a car accident, and sadly he passed away.
You were how old?
I was 13, yeah, and my brothers were 15 and 18, and mum was 53. Our roles changed very quickly in the home.
So he's no longer there. Mm. It must have been dynamically a bit of a shambles there for a while.
Completely. Dynamically a shambles. Perfect way to put it. It, you know, who was the boss now? You know, there are two teenage men in the house. Oh, I'm the boss. No, I'm the boss, you know. And mum is trying to grapple with hormones and teenagehood right in front of her eyes. I'm a young girl thinking, but I thought life was easy and perfect. And yeah, but I thought if you prayed hard enough, this wouldn't happen. But I thought mum and dad were going to live until, you know, the 80s or 90s. So, complete overhaul of all our thinking, and it was extremely hard.
When did you end up becoming your mum's carer?
Yeah, this is interesting because I can't really put a proper timeline on when it started. But
there was no negotiation of a start line, was there?
No, there was no, you know, I can't drive, now you can take me here, you know. But I recognised very quickly, and, you know, my faith. Mum taught me a lot about faith in those very early days when Dad passed away. I recall when everybody left, Italians have something called a lutto, which is, you know, when everyone comes over and pays their respects, and, you know, chairs all around in the lounge room, and everyone's pretty solemn and doesn't say very much except there's a lot of crying and a lot of wailing, and, you know, and when everyone would leave, Mum and I'd sit there, and she taught me the prayers and, you know, how to say the rosary. And so we connected a lot. So I felt I was always close to Mum, but this bond just strengthened immediately. And, I guess when I started to accompany Mum to doctor's appointments was when I really felt like, oh, well, I need to be the translator. So, I need to relay the right message to Mum. And a caring role, it was established even more quite quickly. Mm. So, yeah, as a young teen, I guess I felt that I was mum's carer as well.
You spent a lot of time making those journeys, didn't you?
Oh, completely. After dad died, mum got lupus, and I've later read that it can be brought on by extreme stress. So mum had lupus. So from the autoimmune family, you know, that happened, and that was horrific for mum. I felt really sorry for her. And then when I became a mum and my twins were 7 months old, mum had all this bruising all over her body, just random bruising. And we took her to a few hospitals, and the reason we took her to a few hospitals because one would discharge, the other one was discharged, and we went to St. Vinny's actually, and the director there of hematology said, we need to figure this out. We need to know what this is. And then within a few days he said, you know, she's got factor VIII deficiency. It's an acquired hemophiliac disease. I'm sorry to tell you, she's got at best 3 weeks to live. And so it was horrendous. So
how old are your boys?
A boy and a girl, and they were 7 months old. So I was learning how to be a new mum of multiples, and then took mum home to basically die in my home. And
in 3 weeks, essentially.
Yeah. And I recall my husband and I looking at each other, and I mean, really, actually, he looked at me. I barely wanted to look at him because I thought, don't look at me. Don't ask me questions about when and how and what because I can't answer them. And we're married and I love you, but right now our marriage is not of importance to me. And I basically said that, you know, and I was in pure survival mode. Yeah. So that was a really, really hard time.
3 weeks come and go.
Mm.
What's going on in that time for you?
Oh, I'm, you know, trying to connect even more with mum, as obviously you would do with someone that you know is not going to be with you for much longer. Shielding the truth from her, getting her better, nurturing her, the carer role. You know, I wouldn't have said to anyone, "Oh, I'm my mum's carer." That was what I needed to do to keep mum alive.
Yeah.
But she, you know, she got better every week. She got better. Blood tests came back. She was getting better.
You must be confused at this point.
Confused, you know, and thinking, oh, okay. So she's living. She's flourishing. That's fantastic. You know, and by the end of that year, I remember it was my twins' first birthday, and I you know, went to see someone at Caritane. Mum would come along with me. I was seeing a psych, but I was actually too embarrassed to tell mum that I was seeing a psych. I just said, you know, this lady's teaching me how to be a better mum. Mum would watch my kids in another room.
What was your concern? Was seeing a psych saying something about your adequacy as a daughter? Why were you worried about mum knowing that you were doing that?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. And also, I've since learned that, you know, there need not be shame around the conversation of seeking help. But I just thought, well, I need to be able to, you know, get mum better and be strong and do all of that with a lot of strength and be a good mum. So if mum sees that I'm failing and I'm still actively her carer, gosh, you know, will she still have faith in me? I mean, she always did. But there was a certain amount of shame attached to that. And I actually didn't want her to have a problem to worry about. I didn't want her to think, oh, my daughter needs my help. I thought, no, I've got it in hand. I'll seek a professional's help. And so, you know, look, that period, I really want to stress that it was really hard. Like the black hole of depression was so deep. I never thought I'd claw my way out. I didn't want to be around. It was awful.
Depression is an isolating experience on its own.
Mm.
You're a carer, so that brings you one more step away from what would be considered a normal life for a young mum of very young children, barely past 1 year old now.
Mm.
You're a wife. You're a career woman. What are you doing with your job?
Yeah, good point. Good question. This is at the time that I started to blog. I you know, in my past life, I was an editor and journo and entertainment interviews and fashion and all of, you know, all these wonderful, superficial but exciting things. Yeah. So I created my own blog.
But at its heart, connecting with people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can't be a journalist locked in a dark room.
Oh.
You're supposed to be out there talking with people.
That's right. So I freelanced a lot for women's mags and on topics that were completely so far removed from my life because I wanted to research and get into people's brains and understand something exciting or mysterious. So that, for me, kept me going. I wanted to, on all levels. You know, you mentioned as a wife and a mum and as a journalist. And for me, I wanted to also show that I was, you know, bringing money into the home, you know, like a good wife. Mm. But, you know, I mean, I really sincerely wanted to do that. I wanted to feel that I was contributing and not just being a mum. And there's nothing wrong with just being a mum. But for me, I wanted more. So, yeah, balancing all those roles was difficult, but I knew I wanted a piece of all of it. And it didn't matter that I mean, I felt that I was doing all of them pretty well, and because I always found time to make sure that I did them well, I had no qualms in doing that. But it was, yeah, just the balance, you know, the balance of doing all of those things while being a carer, always putting care at the very top of my agenda as a mum and as mum's carer.
When did dementia start to impact your relationship with your mum?
Well, she was diagnosed about 4 years ago, but I've heard it said that by the time you see that a loved one has dementia or they get it diagnosed, they've probably been hiding it for quite a while. And, you know, you pick up signs. I'd call mum in the morning and I'd say, mum, you know, what's happening? How are you going? She'd say, yeah, listen, weren't you taking me to the doctor today? And I'd actually get really angry because I'd be on top of everything, you know, with to do with mum. And I'd be like, no, mum, no, I didn't say that. What are you talking about, you know? And she'd go, okay, no worries, let it be. And the next day she'd say the same thing. I said, mum, this has got to stop, you know. Mum wasn't a hypochondriac, but I thought, what's going on here? I'd call her and she'd say, you know, I'm really angry. Your brother said they were coming tonight for dinner. And this would be on a cold, you know, winter Friday night. I've just picked up my kids from daycare. And the feeling in my gut was just awful. I'd ring up my brothers and say, did you promise when you were going? No, I didn't, you know. And so I started to see that she'd manifest ideas of what she hoped would be happening that day. It was often around, you know, being around her loved ones or being taken somewhere, some aspect of care or company. And it really broke my heart because I thought this is what's mum's innermost thoughts and we're not doing it and what's going on here. But then I started to recognize it was things that weren't actually promised or true. Yeah. So that was the biggest sign. Random things had happened. Like I'd get a call at 2 a.m. and she'd say, I've fallen. Can you come and pick me up off the floor? And I'd say, mum, how long have you been on the floor? I don't know. I don't know. And yeah, I'd arrive there and mum, if, you know, if someone's been on the floor for a while and they've crawled to the phone and, you know, they're getting on in age and, you know, toileting is kind of hard at that point. Yeah. You can kind of imagine what I saw when I got there. And wow, that was confronting.
This is your mum.
This is my mum. It was about 2 years ago that it really kind of came to a head. Mum had another fall. The cut was pretty deep. She was in hospital and I just said to my brothers, look, I am just not coping. I'm just not coping at all. And I said something about Hammond Care having an after hours line. My brother said, call it, you know, call it and just see what they say, what they advise you. I remember calling and it was just like, honestly, the heavens had opened and this wonderful lady said to me, no, you encourage, you know, you explain to the doctors, you know, your mum needs to stay there as long as she needs to be healed. One of the ER doctors has said, okay, well, look, you know, we'll patch her up and, yeah, you can send her home tonight. I was mortified. I said, no, it's just not happening. You know, mum was in hospital for about a month and then straight from there she went to an aged care facility. I did it solo. I don't recommend it solo. I went to nursing homes and basically looked at rooms where there was a vacancy of, you know, someone there. I remember one particular lady had mum's name but was several years older. And I thought, oh, this must be a sign, someone with mum's name. Isn't that cute? I tried to communicate with her. She was obviously advanced dementia, you know, dying. And the room was dark and it was cold. And I remember leaving and I was just inconsolable. I thought, how am I going to do this, you know? And she went into an amazing place, beautiful people, you know, ticked all the boxes. Yeah, no problem. Yep, respite. She needs it. I need it for me. Yep, this is what I need to do. And I remember just leaving there. You know, they encouraged me to have dinner with mum that night. So I did. And I remember everyone was so quiet in that lunchroom, in that dinner room. Everyone was just so quiet and everything was organized and no one spoke. And it just floored me. And my heart sunk. My heart just sunk. And I mean, look, that was just the way that they operated. You know, it needs to be orderly and you need to eat your meal and take your pills. And then I remember my brother called me later that night and he said, how did it go? How did mum settle in? And I couldn't even speak. I was just inconsolable. I couldn't stop crying. And, you know, he was a bit confused. He said, but I thought this is what you...
This is good news, isn't it?
This is good news, yeah. What you want. And mum's getting looked after, 24-hour care, 5 meals a day. It's all these uncharted waters all the time.
We're going to touch on a part of the story now that's not in your book because it's recent. You lost your mum only a couple of weeks back.
Yeah. It's still pretty raw. So the book was, the book was launched in July and, mum came to the book launch. The only thing I was worried about was mum going to be mobile enough to be, you know, carried up in a wheelchair and, to be at my book launch. And she was, and it launched and she was there front and center. Alzheimer's Australia was there. It was beautiful. It was perfect. My husband and mum-in-law took her home. She didn't say a word all the way home. You know, she was just like, it was all sinking in. And then the next day she kept talking about it. And I thought, that's wonderful. I went there somewhere last night. It was beautiful. You spoke, you know, you cried. My sons were there. It was beautiful. And then she'd bring it up again. And I just thought, thank you, God. Yeah. Thank you for this beautiful moment. And then, you know, about 2 weeks later, she developed a cough. We took her to the emergency room. I mean, when she went into hospital, she was at the advanced stages of dementia. She was 37.9 kilos. We'd jacked up her weight a little bit with some supplements and drinks and stuff. But she was losing a kilo a month in the last few months and eating the same foods. But her body was degenerating pretty fast. So, yeah, we were told it was terminal pneumonia. And Mum had an oxygen mask on the whole time and, you know, she refused to eat. We're trying to get her to eat. We kept thinking, oh, if we just continue to get her to eat, she might build up some energy. And, you know, and they were pretty clear. They were pretty clear, very gentle, but pretty clear about what was going on and about the palliative care route. And I just didn't even want to hear that word. Ironically, I talk about palliative and end-of-life care in the book. I think it's researched pretty well, you know, but now that I've lived it,
yeah.
Wow.
You're not any one specific thing. You're not only a wife. You're not only a mum. You weren't only a daughter. What are you today that perhaps you weren't before when mum was around still?
Wow, that's a good question. I mean, I guess it's a heightened state of being in those roles that I was before, but I didn't do as well or I wasn't as present. That for me is, I think, yeah, because it's a tricky one. You know, one of the first things I thought of was, but am I still a carer? I thought, well, you know what? I am. It's part of my identity. And more than ever now, I think, my book makes me more present to the fact that, being a carer is a living, breathing, ongoing thing. And I guess in keeping mum's legacy alive, I mean, the honour and the privilege of being able to put down her life and my words in the context of when she was still alive, I can't even, it's just, I'm thrilled and I'm my mind is blown as the opportunity to be able to do that. I've got a Facebook page, Our Sandwich Generation, and I've subtitled it, How to Care for Them and Yourself. And, you know, I've got people from all around the world and we all connect in this community. And I'm not going to close that page. And, you know, and I've reached out to them and they've said, you know, I've lost both my parents years ago and this is how I deal with it, and strength to you. And, you know, these people have joined my page, not even actively, I guess, by definition, still being a carer, but they still see themselves as carers.
Josie, there's much in the book that makes it definitely worth the read. And thank you so much for being so courageous and coming in so soon after your mum's passing. It's been a fabulously important conversation and I'm so glad that we got a chance to have it.
Thank you so much, Duane. The opportunity is immense and, oh, look, reaching out to listeners and knowing that they're not alone is such a gift. So I really thank you for that.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.